Hearing is subdivision 2021-10, Graywood Springs.
This is a cluster subdivision to divide 58.1 acres plus or minus into 38 single-family lots located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County. The property is lying on the east side of Oyster Rocks Road, which is Sussex County Route 264, approximately 0.45 mile northeast of Coastal Highway, which is Route 1. The tax parcel ID is District 235, Map 16, Parcel 40.00. The zoning district is AR1, Agricultural Residential District. Submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the applicant's exhibit booklet, a copy of the applicant's subdivision plan, and a copy of the PLUS response from the State Planning Office. We received a letter from Environmental Resources, Inc. concerning endangered, rare, and threatened species on the parcel. We received a copy of the applicant's Chapter 99-9C response. We have copies of the Technical Advisory Committee comments, including USDA and the Public Health Office. We've also received a copy of a letter from the DLDOT Service Level Evaluation response, and we have a letter from the Sussex County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division, and we also have a copy of the applicant's soil feasibility study. And I would note that we have received in total, there was an additional comment in your paperless packet, and they have been circulated amongst the commission, and that's all I have. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Hutt.
Thank you, and good afternoon again. For the record, for this application, my name is David Hutt, an attorney here in Georgetown with the law firm of Morris James. For this application, subdivision number 2021-10, I'm representing DBLP, the applicant for the project as it was read by into the record by Mr. Whitehouse. And on the front row sitting next to me a moment ago was Webb Gray, a principal of DBLP. And the man of the afternoon is on my right, your left, Jeff Clark, registered landscape architect with Landtech and Land Planning. And sitting in the row behind Mr. Gray is Leif Erickson, a professional soil scientist with Atlantic Resource Management and the author of the report that Mr. Whitehouse referenced a moment ago. Sitting to his left is Chris Pfeiffer, a professional engineer with GMB. And sitting behind Mr. Clark is another face you're familiar with, which is Ed Lene, professional wetland scientist with Environmental Resources, Inc. As with the first application, I will be describing the property in very general terms as well as the application. And then I will ask Mr. Clark to review the site plan and details of that site plan for the commission and describe how it meets both the zoning and subdivision codes. After Mr. Clark reviews the site plan and design of the project, I will then ask Mr. Lene to speak to the Planning Commission about his review and investigation of the property, as well as his report, which is of course in the project book that you all have for this afternoon's presentation. As you just heard what Mr. Whitehouse introduced the application, this is another cluster subdivision application. That seems to be the theme this afternoon. And what's proposed is a 38-lot cluster subdivision on a little more than 58 acres, which is highlighted on the screens around the room. And the roadway that runs in front of this property is Oyster Rocks Road. I'm sure everybody here is familiar with Oyster Rocks Road, but in case anyone is not, if you were headed north on Route 1 from the Five Points area, you could make a right onto Oyster Rocks Road at the Lewis Church of Christ building called The Crossing, which is at that intersection. If you were to cross the highway, Route 1, of course, being the highway, on the opposite side of the highway from The Crossing building is Hudson Management Offices, and immediately to the north of Hudson Management Offices is Hudson Fields, which I'm sure most people are familiar with. I know that I have disappointed in a couple recent applications by not noting some features of roadways and how they change names at intersections. This is a classic Sussex County intersection where a highway means that a road that crosses it must change its name, because if you're on the Hudson Management side of Route 1, of course the road is Eagles Crest Road. As you cross over Route 1 and go past The Crossing, the road changes to Oyster Rocks Road, as these things are prone to do, it seems. Of course, as you go past the...
Really bothers you, Mr. Hutt, I can tell.
I just think it's a unique feature of our roads.
Noted.
The, as of course, as you travel on Oyster Rocks Road, after you pass the crossing, you would come to a residential community, several residential communities in a row, the first of those being Covington Chase. And with that, so I don't steal his thunder, and hopefully he's had enough time to collect himself from the last two applications, I will ask Mr. Clark to review the site plan details for you.
Thank you. Again, my name is Jeff Clark, landscape architect, licensed in Delaware. Office is Landtech Land Planning in Bethany Beach. And I think I'm going to ask you to go to the site plan slide, if you would. Jamie. So the site, it's a little bit of overlap here, but the site is situated on the southeast side of Oyster Rocks Road. It's approximately 1,500 feet from that intersection, that Route 1 intersection that David mentioned, in an area that is fully developed to the west of the proposed Graywood Springs community into multiple single-family residential subdivisions and a collection of stripped road frontage residential lots. The entire Graywood Springs property is zoned AR1, consists of 24.93 acres of upland agricultural fields, 14.38 acres of forested upland, 10.66 acres of State of Delaware DENREC regulated tidal wetlands, and 8.14 acres of Waters of the U.S. Non-tidal wetlands, for a total site area of 58.11 acres as surveyed. The agricultural fields on the Graywood Springs subdivision site were not actively tilled during the last season. Both the federal and DENREC jurisdictional wetlands have been professionally delineated and surveyed as a prerequisite to any land use planning for this site, and also a complete site analysis was professionally conducted to learn if any rare, threatened, or endangered species were present, and to identify any special forested areas that should not be developed. And so following my presentation, Mr. Lene will speak about his site-specific environmental work in connection with this property, and each of the reports that Mr. Lene prepared are found in the supplemental data book. Graywood Springs subdivision site is buffered on the north and east by wooded federal and DENREC jurisdictional wetlands that are associated with the headwaters of Fisher Creek. The centerline meanderings of that Fisher Creek then form the eastern boundary of the property. To the east of Fisher Creek, on the opposite bank, are open and cleared lands that are actively farmed, and to the south and abutting Graywood, thank you, to the south and abutting Graywood Springs is open agricultural land that is presently actively tilled and managed for row crop farming. The western boundary of Graywood Springs subdivision is formed by and abuts 14 single-family lots which front on and have direct access to Oyster Rocks Road. Most of the road frontage lots have been improved with single-family residents, each with individual on-site septic systems and wells. Further west and abutting Oyster Rocks Road are several large subdivisions with over 200 lots cumulatively. These developments include Covington Chase subdivision, Oyster Rock subdivision, and Osprey Landing subdivision. As the site plan has been developed, both the federal jurisdictional forested wetland areas and the DENREC tidal jurisdictional areas will be adequately buffered from the proposed single-family home land use, and they will all remain in their natural condition and not be disturbed as a part of the subdivision construction. The planned Graywood Springs subdivision preserves a minimum 50-foot buffer of existing woodlands adjacent to all identified tidal wetlands and a minimum 25-foot buffer of existing woodlands adjacent to all the identified federal jurisdictional wetlands. And an open space management plan prepared by a qualified professional will outline in great detail the strategy to maintain the native trees and shrubs within that natural area, and also to include management of the developer-planted landscape buffer areas and street trees. No lots within Graywood Springs shall have direct access onto Oyster Rocks Road. There is a single commercial entrance planned to connect Graywood Springs with Oyster Rocks Road, much the same as the other subdivisions existing in the area. The Graywood Springs land use plan does illustrate an alternative private street connection if we could pan the site plan to the north. Other way, I'm sorry.
Yep.
You'll see that connection to the undeveloped agricultural lands to the south, should that land ever be developed into residential home sites. The Tidewater Utilities Water Company has adequate public water infrastructure in Oyster Rocks Road directly in front of the site. Tidewater currently serves the existing subdivisions to the west, and all water infrastructure would, of course, be designed to Tidewater standards and specs, which would also have to be reviewed by the state fire marshal's office to conform to his regulations for fire protection. And there's a willing and able letter, a willing and able to serve letter then from Tidewater that's also found in the supplemental data book. The low residential density plan for Greenwood, Graywood Spring subdivision will result in less than one dwelling per acre. The density is 0.65 dwelling units per acre, which is less than, but generally in keeping with the low density character of the surrounding area. All streets, sidewalks, and site grading infrastructure will by necessity be designed, constructed, and inspected in conformance with the Sussex County Engineering Department standards and specs. The property is located within flood zone X and AE per the flood insurance rate maps that were effective in March of 2015. During the conceptual design phase, a thorough site soils investigation was conducted by geotechnical associates, and stormwater management areas were then identified for planning purposes. All grading, drainage, and stormwater management facilities will be designed, constructed, and inspected, again, in conformance with the Sussex Conservation District and DENRIC standards. All on-site septic systems will be designed, constructed, and inspected for conformance to the on-site wastewater treatment and disposal system, DENRIC regulations, and a report containing the site soils analysis and also the proposed on-site septic system types is contained within the supplemental data book. DLDOT confirmed in both the plus comments and the service level evaluation request that the planned development will generate fewer than 50 trips in any hour and fewer than 500 vehicle trips per day. DLDOT will not require a traffic impact study and characterize the additional traffic impact of this proposed development as negligible. A total of 38 lots are proposed. Those lots are range in size from 1/2 acre to the largest lot being 1.2 acres. Each lot fronts on a 50-foot right-of-way with a super elevated street slope having an open drainage swale on one side and a continuous concrete sidewalk on the other side of each street, designed again to Sussex County engineering standards. A community open space park area with a large pond is planned with a wooded area within the wooded area immediately in front of the main entrance intersection with the interior subdivision street. The Graywood Springs subdivision design results in an excess of 31 acres of open space, representing 54% as defined in the code of the overall Graywood Springs site. That is to be actively managed by professional maintenance companies. Along the entire perimeter of the site, adjoining existing developed residential lots is a minimum 30-foot landscape buffer, which will be designed by the project landscape architect. Any existing woods within that 30-foot buffer area shall be preserved after development. And again, we have a 50-foot building construction setback from the property line maintained along that southwest side of the subdivision that abuts land currently used for agricultural purposes. The open space management plan and the interior landscape area will be planted in conformance with that detailed plan. The project was reviewed in November of last year by the Office of State Planning Coordination in the PLUS process, and that complete PLUS report is and our written response has been submitted back to the planning office. And again, it's contained in the supplemental data book. The State Historic Preservation Office, in their comments, noted there are no known archaeological or National Register listed properties on the parcel. Street lighting proposed will be standard Delaware Electric Co-op subdivision poles and fixtures directed downward towards sidewalks and cut off from both new residences and those that are existing on neighboring properties. So this site plan demonstrates that all area and bulk requirements of the Sussex County Code can be met, and the allowable residential density has been calculated for Graywood Springs as follows. The total site area is 58.11 acres. The total area of wetlands is 18.8 acres, which is comprised of both federal and state of Delaware tidal wetlands. That gives us a gross site area with the total minus wetlands of 47.45 acres. In the low density area, as mapped in the comprehensive plan, the gross site area needs to be further reduced by 25%, which brings the gross area to 35.59 acres. The reduced gross site area is then divided by 32,670 square feet, or 3/4 acre, for a maximum allowable number of lots on this property of 47, where 37 or 38 are proposed. The minimum lot size allowable is 1/2 acre, and again, the open space preserved is 31.55 acres. There is a total of 32.1 acres of woodlands that cover the site. 6.6 acres will be removed, that's 20%, or said another way, leaving 80% of the woodlands intact. So that concludes my presentation. I'll ask Mr. Lode to offer his comments.
Okay. Dr. Lene, clearly you did not get the jacket memo.
It's chilly in here sometimes, so I always remember to bring my jacket.
Okay.
I'm Ed Lene from Environmental Resources. I'm a professional wetland scientist. I did a thorough investigation of this property, I guess, starting with the delineation of the state and federal wetlands. The state wetland boundary was done in accordance with the official state wetlands map for this particular area. That's how that was determined, and then that's how the 50-foot buffer is measured from that. As Mr. Clark indicated, there's a minimum 25-foot voluntary buffer that's been established from the boundary of the federally regulated wetlands. Kind of the geography of the site is that Fisher Creek is within that gray area, which is the kind of the center line and the property line of the property. And then from that, the property rises pretty significantly in elevation from that low-lying kind of natural floodplain area. There's portions of Fisher Creek within the property that are tidally influenced. And then as you go to the south, it's pretty much just a non-tidal system. Historically, there were a number of actually excavations within the property to create some ponds along the way. So there's some man-made water features that are within the delineated wetlands that, again, are apart from where the lots are being, but, you know, are part of that open space kind of wetland area that's being shown. Jeff went through the acreage on the site, and, you know, again, there's roughly about 25 acres of upland agricultural field, a little over 14 acres of wooded uplands, 10.86 acres of area that's identified by the state wetlands maps as state regulated wetlands, and then the remainder of wetland area is about 80 acres of non-tidal wetlands that are just regulated by the Corps of Engineers. Of course, the Corps of Engineers regulates the wetlands that the state regulates. As far as one item that all the hydric soils that are on the site, high water table soils, soils that, you know, are poorly suited to development. In the case of this project, all the hydric soils on the site are really contained within the wetlands area that we delineated. Again, as the property rises in elevation, you know, there's some very well-drained and very suitable soils to be able to do in-ground wastewater management on this particular property. In terms of, so I spent a great deal of time on the site and observed, you know, the various habitats out there. One of the two things that I did was to contact the Fish and Wildlife Service for whatever records they had. They do have federally listed threatened species that's in the project vicinity. The habitat is not suitable on this project, which is the eastern black rail. And that would be further downstream when you get into the wide open marshes of the Great Marsh, which is, you know, which Fisher Creek flows toward. That's where that particular species would occur. I also consulted and corresponded with the DENREC Species Conservation and Research Program in terms of, they also are a record keeper. They also keep records for things like bald eagles, which really aren't a federally listed species anymore. So essentially, their findings was that there was no state, rare, or federal listed species on this property, no records for that, and that there was no, you know, special habitats that were identified. And, you know, basically, I would concur with the findings of both those letters based on my on-site observations. So that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
One additional question I have for you, Mr. Lanay, before you walk back to your seat. In the PLUS report, there was comments about the maturity of the forest, and that it was old growth. And if you could and help the Planning Commission understand what you observed when you were on site and investigating the property.
Well, there are parts of this property, and I guess I'll walk up and kind of show on the map. There are parts of the forest on this property that are more mature in nature, and essentially here's kind of where a divide was made between these areas that were excavated. So a lot of this area that appears wooded was actually excavated and is a little more ponded situation, so there's not a great deal of trees. Up on this part of the site, it's probably the one area where the most there's a block of pretty mature woods that comes through this area. A lot of the woods that is up on this northern part of the site is relatively young, and you know, where we would get up to that last lot where that wetlands comes in, a lot of that is actually previously disturbed woodland. So I would not characterize all the woods on this site by any stretch of the imagination as being mature old growth forest. Like many farms, you know, different areas were cleared and manipulated and stuff over time. Again, there is some more mature old growth forest that is down on this, right in this portion of the site, but that's pretty much the extent of it. I did want to mention too that, you know, the wetlands delineation report and plans were submitted to the Corps, and the Corps did issue an approval letter on May 4th, 2021. I believe that may be in the booklet.
Thank you, Mr. Lanay, and I'll confirm for him that the jurisdictional determination is found in the project booklet. Through the presentation and testimony that Mr. Clark gave to the Commission as well as Mr. Lanay, of course, they reviewed the various requirements found in Chapter 99 as well as the zoning code, and how this project and the investigations and reports prepared by the various professionals complies with those chapters of the county code. I want to go back for a moment to sort of where we began when we were talking about the surrounding area and community. It was, when you looked at the original pictures, and if we can zoom out a little bit on this, you can see that lies between Route 1 and the area on Oyster Rocks Road, where this proposed project is located, is a fairly consistent residential rural area along Oyster Rocks Road. And that is not surprising when if you look at the county's future land use map. This area is designated as a low density area on the future land use map, as are the three communities that Mr. Clark referenced as he was making his presentation. All three of those communities are the same or similar style communities, low density, rural residential communities, just as is proposed for Graywood Springs. And like those, as Mr. Clark indicated, the gross density for this project is 0.65 units to the acre. And as the Planning Commission knows, that is well below the allowed density for AR1 and low density areas designated on the future land use map. It's also interesting, as Mr. Clark walked through the numbers for how a person determines the maximum density in AR1 when it's in a low-density area on the future land use map. And he walked through that calculation where you subtract the tidal wetlands, and then you multiply what's the remainder by 25%, and then you divide that by a 3/4 acre lot. And that's protections the county has built into its code so that a cluster subdivision still has an appropriate density. And even when, if you were to just base the density for this project on that reduced figure, the density is just a touch over 1 unit to the acre. It's 1.06 units to the acre. So essentially, it's still one unit to the acre, even if you were to say that the density calculation should be based upon the math that's set forth in the cluster section of the AR1 zoning code. Again, that is consistent with the comprehensive plan and the the description of low-density areas within the comprehensive plan. And Mr. Clark walked through this, and so I don't want to cover it again, but what the cluster option allows, as the commission knows, is there are greater buffers that are provided for. The open space is greater. There's greater tree preservation. As you heard, there'll be 25 acres of the trees on the site will be preserved by using the cluster option subdivision for this. In addition, of course, there are greater buffers that are required for agricultural uses as well, where they are adjacent. For all of those reasons, as when Mr. Clark finished his presentation, he indicated that the project was consistent with the zoning code based upon the design put forward by the professionals here. And I would submit that for the reasons I just stated, the plan is also consistent with the comprehensive plan and the future land use map found within that plan. That concludes our presentation, and myself, and I'm not going to go through each name, but all of us are certainly available to answer any questions that the commission may have. And I do have a proposed set of findings and conditions that I will give to Mr. Whitehouse.
All right, we thank you, Mr. Hutt. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you, and we'll start with Ms. Hoy Stevenson.
I just have a couple. One, I think, is for Dr. Lene. How big is Fisher's Creek, and how far is it from the backs of the lots? Does anybody know?
It varies.
Is it, we've got some creeks in Sussex County that are wet spots.
In general, where there's a defined channel, because there's places where there's not a defined channel.
Okay.
So in general, where there's a defined channel, I might say it's not wider than 10 feet, okay? But it's, as you go up and down, it changes. And there's actually, at one point, as I testified, there were, partly the wetlands were dug out. There were kind of pond-like areas that were made where if you go there in the winter, when we have high water tables, you're actually going to see a lot of water. And then when you show up in the summer months, it's down to, the 10-foot wide channel. And so there's actually a berm that comes across here with a culvert, that the creek goes through. And this is more the state tidal wetland area. And again, as you get down to the downstream part of that with wet wetlands, there's one big area where there was a big, kind of like an impoundment almost dug out of the wetlands as a hunting spot. And so, when you're asking me how wide it is there, it's pretty wide, But as you get up beyond here, there's a ponded area, and then once you get up to this part of the site, it's just, it's down to a narrow channel.
Okay, and there's a lot of vegetation there now, I'm assuming.
There's a good deal of natural vegetation between where that wetland edge is and where the backs of these lots would be.
Okay.
And there's also a good deal of vegetation, wetland vegetation, that buffers the water itself, the creek bed itself, from the.
Okay, and that's important to have that vegetation there for the health of the water system, I'm assuming. The reason I'm asking this is because I wanted to know if it was big enough that somebody in one of those lots would think it was a water feature, and that they would just, even though it's past where their property is would clear down to the water.
There's a couple lots here where, like right here, there's kind of a pond already that somebody might be able to see, but there's not a lot of woods or area that would be able to block a view. And then way up on the north end of the site, you could slide it down a little bit. Right here is this other embayment area that I was telling you about. It doesn't really pop through on because we have shading and stuff over to be able to see.
Okay.
So, and again, but these lots are pretty far away. There's nowhere you're going to see all the way across that piece of water. So
okay.
I don't think, in the case of this lot, I don't really think there's, your question, are there views that are people going to try to clear?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that I would think that's that big a concern on this particular site.
Thank you. Okay. And then I just want to make sure the lots, have you actually been okayed for the septic on these? Because it seems like there were spots that had denial, and then the front was okay and the back was bit. So is it, or you just would go through that with DENREC once you?
It's done.
It's done. Okay.
Every lot has a prescribed system type on it and a prescribed location.
Yeah, it was. I got to say, I am not up on everything that you said. Every one of them, elevated sand mound with. And I was like, okay. So there's some of them are going to be mound systems, and some are going to be just regular septic, like.
There are a few mounds.
Yeah.
A few.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And if you had specific questions about that, Mr. Erickson is here and could certainly answer any specific questions about
as long
details.
As they're all okay. Are you building the houses or are you selling lots on this?
There will be custom homes similar to the last applications that have been here. They will be custom homes.
So that they're going to be selling houses, not lots that people would come in and build on. So when they come, they will see where the septic system is, if there's a mound system and all that. It's not going to be a shock to them someday that, oh, I have to put my septic in my front yard.
Okay. That is the plan, yes.
Okay, thank you.
And one thing I would note, just you didn't ask the question, but it dawned on me when Mr. Linnae made his comment that there likely is hunting in the area, and it's not in the proposed conditions that I have, but certainly a hunting notice and the restrictive covenants for the community would be probably a good addition given the nature of the property across the way.
Thank you. Okay, that's all I had.
Okay, Mr. Hopkins?
No questions.
I just have to say that is probably the best creative use of a really cut up piece of land. That I looked at it initially and was like, wow, I have all the angles.
This is one classic Sussex County lot, isn't it? I mean, some farmer cut off chunks every time he needed to buy Christmas presents.
Yeah. And to that point, I just was going to clarify, it wasn't undercrop this past year, but it typically was tilled over the years before. It's farmland.
It was.
So some of those areas that are wet now may have been created by the farmer. Okay, that's all I have.
Mr. White House.
Just one, if I may, Mr. Chairman. It's a question about the leftover strip in the center of the site. Has any thought been given to that for easements or access, or is it just open space?
Say, we had a discussion about that, but I'll ask Mr. Clark, the land use planner, talk about that.
It's not really adequate for access. In terms of where it is, but we really don't have a use for it. I'm not sure why the owner left a narrow strip like that. One option would be to approach the neighbor and see if they had any interest in it. It really doesn't serve any purpose for the subdivision. And maybe do a swap or something. That's the land use plan doesn't have any accommodation for it.
Thank you.
All right.
No questions for me. Thanks.
All right, sir. Thank you. All right, Mr. Hutt. Take a seat nearby. We'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2021-10, Graywood Springs? Is there anyone that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2021-10? Yes, sir. Step right up. Come on.
My name is John Vincent. I own the farm to the south of the development. Okay. I border Fisher Creek. Mm-hmm. There are two problems that exist with the Fisher Creek area. One is very severe. The other is this development, which I don't have concrete data to give you. I'm a chemist. I work around the world on cruise ships building desalinization wastewater plants. I hold a wastewater patent in the United States for the Lazarus process. I'm working on my doctorate degree research now for the effect of opiates on single-cell bacteria. Fisher Creek has a bigger problem than what anybody can imagine. And it has to do with the State Highway Department. My farm gets the runoff from Route 88 all the way north to Whitechapel Church. That's 2,600 feet, and it's 135 feet wide. I have a drone movie that we can put on, but I don't want to get it up yet. I wanted to show you some of the things in, quote, living color, but when I got here Tuesday, we had rain, and the drone operator didn't want to fly too much in the rain, and I couldn't really go up and down the highway. It seemed like there was an awful lot of traffic right then, and I didn't want a drone buzzing along the highway and people looking over and seeing this and say, oh. But just to let you know, on my front field on the farm, just south of Whitechapel Church, the discharge pipe is a concrete culvert that's 12 inches wide. On the west side of Route 1, the culvert is a metal culvert, and it's 24 inches wide. The center drain are French drains. So when you get a 4-inch rain on that kind of surface area, even though you can say you have grass, riparian buffers in the middle of the highway, you still end up getting 864,000 gallons of water just in that one little stretch. Now, my neighbor, the next farm north, gets some runoff, and it comes across. I never calculated that because I can't speak to it. But on this, I can. On my testing, I've found every type of aromatic and aliphatic hydrocarbon you can name. Now, how this began to evidence itself comes way back in the very late 60s, before I had to go to Southeast Asia. I used to go down into Fisher Creek right after the first pond that they were pointing out here. There's a dam. In that outfall, there were eels. Balls of baby eels in the spring. When I came back out of Southeast Asia in 1974, I came home and I was getting readjusted to things, and I went down in the branch. There were no eels. There never has been anymore. They're gone. And so this led me to start scratching the back of my head as to what was going on. Well, some numbers that might have an impact. Just recently, I went to the Dell.com website, and they said they had a chart of automobile trips from Route 16 down to Five Points. In 2011, there were 27,150 trips average per day. In 2018, there was 35,191. Now that's a 22% increase. Does anybody here feel that that number is going to go down? Of course not. And the traffic pattern has changed because now we have a lot of construction equipment that's going up and down the road from 6:30 in the morning till probably 8:30, quarter to 9. Trucks, trailers, backhoes, bulldozers, excavators, aluminum siding, the gutter guys, a lot of trucks. It's not just all cars. And now traffic backs up coming into the Five Points area all the way back to Broadkill River Bridge. And it's sitting there. And then when they go back north on Sunday, they're still sitting almost down to Red Mill Pond waiting to go through the light at Route 16. Now, of course, some of that's going to change when they get the new traffic pattern in and they get the overpasses. So that will be very meaningful. But in the meantime, you've got all these hydrocarbons. Well, what do hydrocarbons do to plant life? If somebody poured some oil on your front lawn, would you see it? Right. In a matter of weeks, you would see this dead spot on your grass. Now, all this comes on, and the only way I can figure this works, and you'll see this when we run the drone footage, during the wintertime, when the outfall of Fisher Creek starts to enter the marsh, it's iced over. And as the water comes out of the branch, there is, I believe, an artesian well, because the water is warmer and it's steaming coming out. So if you're getting a rain in the winter, you're getting warmer water coming out on top of this ice, and it's flowing through those two retention ponds, or not retention ponds, they were irrigation ponds that the Richards family had put in when they were growing potatoes. And you flush that out of there, and then it goes out and sits on top of that ice. And then as things begin to melt, that water, which is very high in hydrocarbons, comes through, and it's killed all the grass. Now, you're going to see a huge lake, pond, whatever you want to call it. But it's null and void. I was even mentioning to the guy that was flying the drone, do you see any shorebirds? No, there were no birds there. Do you see any crab shells or mollusk shells? No, it's a mud plain, and even the banks of the existing stream, and it was a stream. Up until I left for the military, it was a stream. It is now a giant lake, and it's moving out on the marsh. It will move out on the marsh and it will join Cool Spring Creek. Then it's going to make a rapid turn and go to Broadkill. Then it's going to go to Roosevelt Inlet. Now you're killing everything up there, all your fairy shrimp, all your crabs, all your cyprinidae, cyprinidonidae, top minnows, fatback minnows. You're wiping them out. So that's coming off the road system as we know it now, and it's probably going to get worse. Now we got a development that has septic systems. How's the septic system work? What's the function? It's all anaerobic digestion, right? Anaerobic bacteria. Well, what's every housewife doing now three or four times a week? Man, let's get that Lysol. Woohoo! And we're going to disinfect this house. I don't want the COVID. Get a mask on or something. Everybody's putting a lot of disinfectant out. Well, if your system is supposed to work off of anaerobic bacteria, what do you suppose is happening to the bacteria from the alcohol that you wipe on your hands and wash them, and then you're spraying down with quaternary ammonium compounds, and then, hey, don't forget the Clorox. Gotta clean Clorox. That bleach really does a number, and it does. The other thing that we've come along is that we have a generation of cleaning products. One of them is called Dawn Liquid. If you don't have any ducks to wash, you can wash your dishes in it. The active ingredient, anybody know what the active ingredient in Dawn dishwash liquid is? DDBSA, dodecylbenzene sulfonate. One of the best anionic surfactants I've ever worked with. I use it in the lab to unwind DNA. It's very good. It's even in some hair shampoos. On grease, oil, fats, when you put the Dawn in the water, the grease and oil that's on the surface splits and runs to the side because it breaks the carbon bond. Well, out in the septic system, that carbon cools off, the water cools down, and the carbon is lighter than water, from all the fats, and it rises to the top. Once it rises to the top, we've already got a bacterial colony that's had the dog rags beat out of it with disinfectants. Now, if it's sitting on top, how does the bacteria get to it? It doesn't. Those fats, oils, and greases start to go rancid, and they break down. And they liberate what's called free fatty acids. It's an organic acid, and it's really strong, very strong. That's going to come out in your effluent and your leachate from these septic systems. This close to those wetlands and that wood's edge, I took a picture of the wood's edge, but I couldn't really do it justice because there's a lot of leaves on the trees. If you go in the wood's edge on the far, I guess you would call it, eastern end of the property, if you go in not more than 15 or 18 feet, you're in up to your knees. The soil is rotten. Now, whether it's rotten from the effect of hydrocarbons over 35 or 40 years, which is only going to get worse, or maybe there's leachate coming from some of these other developments. They're all septic tanks. And I've never done a dye study over on Oyster Rock or Osprey Landing to see if that water is actually migrating across Oyster Rock Road. But this definitely will not have to go across a road or an impacted surface. It's going to go right in the woods, and it's going to head right down Fisher Creek. So if you want to, I'm not the best media guru to help with this. What you're looking at right here, we went out to the end of Oyster Rock Road, and we just sent the drone up and just panned around, and you can see what the marsh looks like. Now, we took the drone towards the development. We'd be heading down towards the development, and you see the wood's edge, and you see all the leaves that are on there. Can you hold it for a minute? Now, when you begin, when we were on that wood's edge, up here you saw a line of trees, and then there was an opening behind it. That's where the marsh is. That's what you don't see. That's where the damage is. Now we're getting up over the woods line. There is Fisher Creek coming out of the Richards property. Now there's plant life along there. Now watch up here, it's starting to get a little wider. Now, this is when we're down in close looking at it. You've got low brush. When I was a young man, there were bayberries in here to the point where you couldn't even paddle a canoe through them. It was arbored over. They're all gone. Look at your trees out here. Hold it a second. Look at your trees. We've got a nice covering of phragmitis, and then we've got dead trees. Keep looking in there, you see more of them, more dead trees. You could say, well, this is saltwater intrusion or something to do with climate change. These were salt tolerant plants. My father trapped this marsh. This had one stream coming through it, and now we have a lake. Now again, this is a stream, and you don't see any big trees. Big trees are gone. All we've got is some shrubs, marsh elders, more dead trees. See the roots, the root balls that are right out in the end from where they fell over? So this is not a saltwater intrusion from a high tide. Now there, as we come backwards, you see how it's made a finger in there. When I was a kid, that was all like a forest. It was a woods. There were trees in there that were 30, 40 feet tall, and bayberries everywhere.
All right, so I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Sure.
Take maybe another 2 minutes.
All we're going to do is leave this shot and come up, and we're going to go to Route 1, and it shows you the outfall. Okay. But you kind of get the idea of what we're talking about here, and without any kind of further testing or some type of concrete data, I would say if you put, that's the back end of my home farm, if you put a development in the other side, this is part of that big pond that you're seeing. This was all hard marsh. Okay. And when he pans around, as he comes around, you see this outfall? This is a stream. This came up, came around here, and made a stream that came all the way up the middle, and there was grass on both sides. It's all gone. It was 3 square marsh hay. It's all gone. You can see the marsh. If it had been dead low tide, we would have seen. Did you see any shorebirds flying over, any egrets, anything? Nothing wants to get in it. There's no food there. Well, I didn't want to power your time up, but I appreciate it very much.
Okay, sir. We thank you. Would anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, sir. Come on up.
See if you can go Charles Warrington Mountain, right, Arster Rock Road and Route 1.
Okay.
Can you put it on there? I looked at it so much it makes me dizzy. Below that arrow there, I'm right on Arster Rock Road in 1. See down here?
Yeah. This is me here.
Okay.
What's up to that order I put right there?
Okay.
I don't know what you folks think, but I think we got enough traffic.
He okay. said he spent a lot of time there. I've been there since 1948, so I've spent a little time too. But I'm just saying, we got enough traffic on that road now, we don't really need it.
Okay.
And we don't need the complaints about the dust when I'm tilling that ground. On Covington Chase, woman come over there and said, you putting a lot of dust in my swimming pool. I said, but I was putting dust there before you was ever here. You know what I mean? And it just goes on. They've been there trying to buy my place 5 or 6 times, but I'm not selling. Okay. I'm keeping farmland. Okay. But they're eating it up all the way around. We used to till that ground all the way around on that side, all gone houses. I got a church on one side of me and a church on the other side of me. They say it's because I'm so ornery, but I don't know. It's just that it's the way it worked out, but I don't think we need no more traffic down that road.
All right, sir. Thank you.
That's all I've got to say. Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. Thank you,
sir. I tell you one thing. Do you do this every day?
Not every
it's
day.
It's boring as I ever seen.
We do it.
Thank you.
We do it twice a month, whether we need to or not. Okay, who's next? Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, ma'am. Come on up.
Hello, my name is Julie Short. I live in 14747 Oyster Rocks Road. We live right behind Sparky. It would butt up right here. We live there.
Okay.
My grandmother Hendrickson is back there. Yeah, that farm behind us has been in our family for years up until the death of my aunt. We just don't want to see the wetlands get destroyed by houses any further than they already have. I can't speak as well as John Vincent to that, but it's just a shame to see, you know, our wetlands being destroyed even further than they already are. You know, we do have concerns about the traffic. As Sparky spoke, I mean, it's already difficult. There's no shoulder on Oyster Rocks Road. You know, I don't feel safe riding my bike often because there's just so much traffic. I don't really want to get hit. Just concerned as, you know, everyone else has said, I just feel that it's a destruction of wetlands even further. You know, there's deer back there, there's turkeys, you know, even albino deers and turkeys. It's just a shame to see what the wildlife would have to go to. I know there's adjacent farms, but it's just a shame to see them have to get hit even further than they already have been. That's all, just concerned, as always.
All right, thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I'm Lydia Richardson, 14475 Forster Rock Road. Mm-hmm. I would like to see the farmland being maintained as farmland, not sold for homes, but mm-hmm. for farmland.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Operator, is there anyone on the line who would like to speak in favor of or in opposition to subdivision 2021-10 Graywood Springs?
If there is anyone on the line in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star.
All right, sir, we thank you. All right, anyone on the commission have any further questions?
Thank you.
All right, there being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. And ladies and gentlemen, we've reached a point in our meeting where it's time for our scheduled recess, so we will stand in recess until 6:05.